The world might be falling apart, but MVP is here to walk you through it. Is that too much?
It didn't come out the way you rehearsed it?
I didn't rehearse it. That's the problem.
Welcome to MVP Podcast, also known as Most Valuable Photography Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of Most Valuable Photography. I'm Clay.
And I'm Devon.
And today we have a special guest, and that is Aaron Jean. Welcome to MVP.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me. I'm excited to join the conversation.
Thank you. On Through My Lens, I had Devon on, I was May 20th, I believe, right?
Yeah.
And then next week, I had Aaron on. And now the two of them are on MVP.
Nice.
Yes. So we're here in June of 2020. If you're not aware of what's going on around the world right now, you might be living under a rock. And if you are living under a rock, let me enlighten you. The world might be falling apart. So I think before we get into some topics here pertaining what the current crisis will do, let's sort of discuss what is going on right now.
Well, I think people are tired, and I think there has been I think things are coming to light that have always been there, and I think people have been suppressing it and ignoring it long enough, and I think it's come to a head. And you know, you keep anything bottled up, it's going to explode, and I think we're seeing the explosion now. And you know, the events that sparked it aren't new, but I think people have gotten to the point when it's like, enough is enough. And the sad part is, if things were handled the way they logically should have been handled, a lot of stuff could have been avoided. You know, a lot of the unrest, a lot of the need to protest, any of the rioting, like all of that could have been avoided.
Right.
Had things been handled properly.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, 100%.
Aaron, you're in Madrid. Devon, you're in New Jersey. New Jersey, I'm pretty sure, riots happening.
Well, it's kind of twofold, because the protests, for the most part, have been peaceful. What we're seeing is a lot of agitators.
I meant protests, not rioting. Sorry. Yeah. I think the media has gotten those words mixed in my head.
Yeah,
you've been protesting. Sorry.
Yeah. So I mean, I think that for the most part, in whole, most of the protests, and I think all of the protests, I would go as far as to say, have been organized and meant to be a peaceful protest and a disruption. You know, maybe go as far as blocking traffic and that sort of thing, you know, making a disruption so people can be heard. And that's the whole point of protesting. But, you know, the things that are making it onto the news, I think, aren't fair, because they're definitely, you know, organized agitators coming in to disrupt things and make things, you know, kind of control the narrative. And I think that has the message getting lost, because you have people who are going out to protest, and then you have to have people who are there policing the protesters, and then you have to deal with the police, and you have people agitating the police, and you have people going into neighborhoods and protesting who aren't from there,
right,
and causing problems. So I think the thing that needs to be done is there needs to be a lot more organization. You know, a lot of this is just, we're mad, everybody ran outside. You know, and, you know, that's why I didn't go protest, because I didn't know who organized this. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know what I was walking into. And then people were just saying that there's going to be a protest in this area. And then everybody showed up.
Right.
So you just see mobs of people everywhere. And it was kind of, some people were organized, some weren't. Some had an agenda, some didn't. Some were just there for selfies, some were just there for live videos, some were, you know, it was just a little bit too confusing for me. And I'm still very afraid of COVID-19.
Yeah, I am.
So
as well.
I was leery. I see why people went out, but I'm still very leery, and I'm still not comfortable with being in, you know, a crowd of thousands to go protest. But that's my personal choice, and I don't knock anybody else for, you know, going out and speaking their voice. Everybody has to make a decision what they think is best for them. But I thought me staying home, I have many other ways that I can protest and I can make my voice heard.
Agreed. What about you, Aaron, in Madrid?
Yeah, so the protest, I just saw, there's nothing really organized here, but I saw a few friends in one of the areas that were doing for Spain, it was a small protest because the Spaniards are next to the French in terms of when they have something to say, they can draw some pretty serious crowds. But frankly, we're still under a pretty significant quarantine here. And so we're not really allowed to demonstrate like that. Mm-hmm. And so I think everything here has been pretty small. And as you guys know, we got hit early and hard by COVID. And so the government has taken a pretty strong stand. Mm-hmm. My wife and I are both doing what we can. My wife works directly with a good friend of ours who is an anti-racist educator. Anti-racism educator, and so we've been doing our best to support her. And you know, it's funny because she came to Madrid last summer, and we've been kind of hanging out and talking to her since then, and chatting and following her ride. And she's been growing her Instagram at the when the protest first started was about 6,000 people. And I think she just hit over 100,000.
Wow. What is her Instagram?
On Instagram. It's, her name is Monique Melton. I always get it wrong.
We can put it in the show notes if you don't.
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes. I think it's Mo Motivates, but it's M-O-E. I'll look it up and send it to you.
Okay.
But you can look up Monique Melton. And and she's been, and it's quite interesting because, and I don't think she would be upset with me sharing this, but it's interesting watching the inside baseball of anti-racism education, and this is that in times of the most stress, she's the most popular. Mm-hmm. So she spends all her life working with people and spending her time and marketing dollars trying to get in front of white people who need to discuss this and who need to learn about this. Mm-hmm. And then when somebody is killed and when she's grieving and when she's struggling, people are just overwhelm her, you know? And so it's interesting that her business is predicated or gets the busiest and is responsive to tragedy. And it's something that always breaks my heart a bit when I think about it. It's the worst thing that can happen to her is that she gets busy.
She's in Colombia, in the DC area?
Yeah, actually she is.
Found her. Yeah. M-O-E Motivate.
That's it, yeah. Motivate.
Yeah, I've actually seen you share her stuff on Instagram. I may have followed her. Because you have shared her stuff on Instagram, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I share it all the time. She's she's one of those people that she is a beautiful person, and she's one of those people that carries the energy and the weather with her. When she moves places, you can just feel it. And so I love that she does the work. And if you follow her, she does not pull punches. She doesn't, try to pander. She doesn't say it softly or nicely. She's very, very confident and passionate about her message, but you just can't help to see what a wonderful person she is. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Yeah. I think I know that, we had the whole, Blackout Tuesday yesterday. Today's Wednesday,
which was also confusing.
It was very confusing. Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. Is that it was extremely confusing because I know Blackout Tuesday was supposed to be the music industry's time to blackout, to hear or to give space to black voices, right? And then we also had melanated voices or something hashtag something melanated voices.
Yeah.
Am I confusing it?
That's exactly to my point. I just think that there needs to be a lot more organization, and there needs to be some go-to places where you can get accurate information, because it seems like I saw so many different stories and meanings behind Blackout Tuesday. Some people were offended by what people were doing, and some people were encouraging other people to do things, and it was just too many different sides of the story. There was no organization in it. It was just nobody knew exactly what we should be doing. You know, if you, you know, were you showing solidarity if you posted the black thing? Were you messing up Black Lives Matter? Because now when you search the hashtag, it's going to be all black. Did showing all black on Black Lives Matter show solidarity? It was just so many different ways to read what was going on. I think there definitely needs to be some organization to, you know, the movement.
I think not using the hashtag Black Lives Matters for that black square or anything that blocks up a whole feed was the one thing that I got from this, is that you don't want to use Black Lives Matters for just anything, right? Like if if Black Lives Matters should be about something that actually truly does matter to Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Right. So the thing is that the whole black square thing, if you were posting it, if it at least once in the day, that showed everyone in your, you know, who follows you that you're in solidarity with them, that you're about humanity. Now, if you didn't share it and you still post it, I don't think you should be shamed for that either, right? Because you don't really, like, online is extremely difficult to understand someone's true motives, right? You could be the biggest racist and just pacify people by putting it up there because you're like, well, whatever, shut them up. I'll post a black square.
Like, yeah, it can totally be performative. And like, you look at all the brands, like I almost like lost my coffee when I read the quote from the NFL, and I'm like, you know, hire Colin Kaepernick, you know, like, there you go. Make him the ambassador of the NFL because I'm like, all this stuff was so, and I don't know if you guys read, there was a Ben and Jerry's made a post about that. And it was, you have to read it. I can't even put it all together, but they were like very detailed in the historic issues of why Black Lives Matter, of the history of racism. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. I was like, now that is a PR post, but you know, so many people were just doing that. But on the other hand, like I also felt like when I opened my Instagram, it was nothing but black squares. And I know that there's sometimes, there can be some discussion. I mean, like, you know, we all watch the video, or a lot of us watch the video of George Floyd. Mm-hmm. And it's horrendous. And we should not have to watch that video or to see anything else to understand how horrible that the systemic racism is, and the real repercussions, not the systemic repercussions that we kind of like, you know, intangibly that we don't know, but like that it actually affects people's lives, their breathing, living lives. And so I struggle back and forth, and I don't presume to have anything other than just my personal opinion. But I think it's kind of a little bit of a nice break to stop looking at abuse and horror and just sit back and everybody say, like, fundamentally, I believe that. So it's complicated. It really is complicated. And I think it's complicated for everyone. I watched my wife, you know, working with some of the people that she works with, and everybody is trying to figure out, oh, where did this start? How do we do it? Do we do it or not do it? I just did it, but I'm going to pull it down. And so, like, I think to Devon's point, the organization, I feel like we have to get more organized, because like there are big things at play, and if we can't get the small things right, then we're going to lose traction. And so, that's my hope right now, is it's like, okay, let's try to reframe this and get something actually out of it, and not just get a big social media splash. Everybody, you know, a bunch of people get hurt in protests and riots, and then it go back to, you know, how it's been since, you know, Trayvon Martin and Ferguson. And so,
yeah, I have way too many podcasts. I get it, but I released an episode yesterday on Just Clay about, you know, this whole, our history as a country. And I feel like we have to strike while the iron is hot. Is that the statement? I think that's the statement, right? Definitely. Like right now we have a movement, a moment happening, and we need to vote people who don't speak for all of us. And I mean all of us, not just minorities, not just pockets of people. Like, because the thing is that the majority of people are not for racism. I know blacks are considered minorities, but it's the minority people who sort of force that upon a whole society, right? I mean, I can't imagine the majority of people in this country are racist.
Yeah, I think the, and once again, like I'm only going to share like my limited amount of knowledge, but you know, from the the reading I've done and the people that I've spoken to about it. I mean, I think what's changing for our time is, like, when I grew up, it was like we were taught tolerance, right? Like mm-hmm. it was, you know, don't be racist and the hate. And coming from, you know, the 60s and the 70s, like there was a legitimate amount of like hatred mm-hmm. That I think existed just like at least just above the surface and then below the surface. Whereas I think a little bit of the quote unquote hatred had dissipated and we learned tolerance, right? And mm-hmm. like, we don't see color and, you know, we're all one world and like all of this stuff that my generation kind of bought into. But I think, you know, what kind of happened with that is the racial structure of our systems stayed the same. And then, you know, we, you know, for the United States, like we branch it out and we leave, you know, the South is still left to do the state led stuff with like voting and
yeah,
and so there wasn't enough like mass control, and then we get to this point, and so the systems are still there that are, and not that we hate, but we're indifferent, right? Like mm-hmm. it's, well, you know, they like the whole idea now of like, well, they shouldn't be writing. It's like, well, like Devon said in the when we first started talking, like everything here was avoidable. There were 100 bad decisions that have been made mm-hmm. that could have eliminated every single riot.
Agree.
And so like my, you know, I think that's my thing. And it's, and people are like, I see, especially with Christians, like it'll be like, oh, stop the hatred. And it's like, I don't think it's hatred anymore. Like those guys on George Floyd's neck were not impassioned, hateful racist. They were indifferent mm-hmm. and they were casual about it. And I think that's where that's crept in. And so like, I find, you know, as a white person, like I find that it can be easily masked because it's no longer really like just like pure hatred. Now it's just like, well, 50-50. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. We'll move on. Mm-hmm. Whereas, and therein you have the privilege, right? Like the 50-50, you can move on. There are people that are 50-50 that cannot move on. And right. so that's what we're dealing with. And so I think now it's that. It's insidious and it's almost like not invisible, but it's hard to see. Like it's not as clear as I think we imagine racism in our heads. So, mm-hmm. But to your point with leadership, like we absolutely, and I don't think this is a Republican Democrat thing. Like I truly think that people have to start considering like really, again, looking at policies, looking at people that support things. I mean, like it can't, the answers are no longer just simple, like, you know, vote D or vote R. I think it's like,
yeah.
There are some serious issues on both sides and nobody's really knocking this out of the park right now.
I agree.
And I think that, you know, when you start to see, you know, injustice for any group of people, you need to start getting nervous because it can easily become your problem.
Yeah.
You absolutely. Know, so it could be, you know, a north south thing, it could be a rich poor thing, it could be a have nots thing. But you know, you start seeing those injustices and you just chalk it up to, well, it's their problem, it's everybody's problem, because yeah. you know, it could be your dad or brother or sister or whoever next, you know. And then, you know, these precedents are being set. And what's how are you going to feel when that happens to you? Don't think it can happen to you.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
So, photography, we're seeing a lot of photography, of events happening. I know that whenever we have war times, photography always sticks around with us. I've seen pictures of events happening and people commenting that they're doctored. Now, I know that a lot of Photoshop is, you know, more prevalent now. How do you think photography will help us remember or define this time?
I'll let Aaron go first.
Well, like, I have an interesting kind of thought about this. And it's, there's a photographer that I've been following for a long time. Mm-hmm. He's a black man, but I think he's Jamaican, or his name is Ruddy Roy, RuddyRoye. And I've been following especially his stories and stuff on Instagram for a long time. And he is a huge advocate for, like people of color in mm-hmm. photography and letting people of color tell people of color stories. And he even to the point where he will go and call out, you know, very prominent white photographers for National Geographic or for, you know, Time Magazine or AP journalists. And it's interesting because like he really works hard to claim the narrative of like people telling people's stories that that are more like them, that see the little inconsistencies, and mm-hmm. he will rip people up when mm-hmm. it comes to especially portraying, like, you know, like going to Africa and be like, oh, I'm going to go, you know, to this place in Africa. I'm going to take pictures of really, really poor people and show all this like unfairness and without really like understanding the whole aspect of what they're showing. And so 50 people go and take a vacation and they all come back with these photos that, you know, show this. And then our narrative is like, oh, poor, you know, poor Africa, and oh, poor, you know, poor this community, poor that. And sometimes I'm like, man, I don't like, he'll get really like, into it, and I'm like, man, I don't really know. I don't know if I see that, but I think I've thought about it for a long time. And so watching him now, like you, I've watched the whole conversation, and now I see that come out, mm-hmm. and especially times like this in a more kind of vicious way, where it's like, oh, here's somebody in total tragedy. So I find it really interesting, to think about now. Like I was looking at some AP report or AP photographers, and there were. And I promised myself I'd write them down, but I didn't. But there were two AP photographers that were, I think one was Hispanic, and then there was another photographer that was also a person of color. And I was like, it's exciting to see that it's not like a bunch of white dudes mm-hmm. and their photography jackets with their Leicas,
yeah.
like out there, like, I'm gonna, it's like, man, no, it shouldn't happen like that. Exactly. You know, like people should see the real pieces of it and the subtleties of it that don't make for a great, like a picture in somebody's mind that isn't part of the community. But so that's my two cents. I think it's nice to see there are more photographers of color that are getting in there that have built the narrative already and built the skill set and the relationships. And I'm hoping that that's what's going to come out of this a little bit, at least for me, and kind of what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm. True, I agree. Devon?
I'm totally against doctoring any photos that are supposed to be photojournalistic. Mm-hmm. Like, they should just be what they are.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, I like photographers who post pictures and don't necessarily caption them unless they're telling the story.
Mm-hmm.
And the story is important, and they kind of leave them to interpretation. The other thing I see is there's multi interpretations of the same imagery that's going on.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot.
So my nephew's friend posted during the protests, you know, to give the protesters a break, they played music and the protesters were line dancing.
They were?
I guess because, you know, when you're marching, you're yelling, yeah. it's tiring, you know, and I think yeah. to keep the spirits, you know, because, you know, a crowd can get very angry yeah. really fast. And I think they played music so that they could do a quick line dance and then keep marching. So his friend posted it and said he loves to see the solidarity of all these people coming together to dance together. Right. And then another person saw it and like, oh, look at this buffoonery. Black people can't even do anything without like hooning, you know? So it's kind of like, depending on which post you read, you're like, oh, this is beautiful. Like all these people came together from all walks of life and they danced together and they protested together. And then the other thing is like, oh yeah, Black people can't do anything. They can't even be serious for, you know, to protest. They got to go out there and start dancing. So all that to say, you know, we're going to see these images and the narrative may be skewed in one direction or the other. So mm-hmm. I think maybe it is important for those taking the images to caption them
yeah.
and to tell the story and not just post them without any background information.
Yeah.
You know, I think we need to see exactly what's going on. You know, and if you see if they're taking police pictures arresting a guy, it's, you know, maybe this guy was doing absolutely nothing. He was just protesting and the police jumped on him. You know, that story needs to be told.
Mm-hmm.
Or the police are arresting them because this guy threw a bottle at a cop, you know. So I think the story needs to be accurate. And I think the narrative needs to be controlled and told honestly, you know, and it can't be skewed in any one direction. I think we need to hear the whole story. And that's the problem I'm seeing now. And it's difficult to try to figure out what's true, what's not true, and what the real story is and what the whole story is. And I think, you know, that's the thing. And I'm glad that, you know, the whole video was captured, you know, that sparked all this, right? Because if the whole video wasn't captured, it would be, you know, oh no, he was fighting the cop. It would be this whole story about why they justifiably did what they did. you know, and you know, you got to see not only one video, you see another video from different angles. Yeah. And then you start to question like, well, why is it so difficult to figure this out? Mm-hmm. Like, exactly. Is everybody seeing the same thing I'm seeing? Like, this is not too, you know, and it's been that way. It's like, you see these videos that, you know, in its entirety.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, like, why is this so hard to figure out? Like, I don't think it's a video. you know, nobody's telling a story. Like, just watch it. You know, it's not doctored. It's cell phone video. It's like, this is what it is. You guys see the guy. You see the same people I'm seeing. You're seeing the same event I'm seeing. What's there to figure out? You know, that's the thing I think that, and I think that's, you know, I think it's important for things to be documented, because if you look back in history, like, a lot of things we have are just not even a video. There's just photos.
Yeah.
You know, there's just photos of all the stuff that took place, and there's photos and there's stories. You know, so, but, you know, I think
we have entered, Trump has ushered in the era of fake news, right? So, I mean, there are people who follow him, and there are people who are going to be around who can look at something happening right in front of them and not believe it. And that's the part that is frustrating, I think, that we could look at something actually happening and someone like Trump says that that didn't happen, and his base says that didn't happen. And then you have, that's why you have a disconnect here, I think, you know?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, it's there's a truth and there's what people believe. Right. And I think that's always going to be the issue. Like, you know, regardless of what the truth is, you're always going to have to deal with what people believe, you know, and people will, you know, there's always science and there's, you know, there's like science and there's religion, right? And so there's the facts and it's what people believe. So I think you're always going to have that. So I think, you know, you can, we're at the point now where you can show somebody a video, but, and those are the facts, but you still have to get them to believe that actually happened, you know? It's like,
yeah, it interests me that the, like, we talk about like photojournalism, and like, I think about with all of us, like, anytime as a photographer, you are considering, and you're trained, like, especially as, at that level, you're always looking for light, expression, angle. Like, you're coming in, like, you're seeing what you're seeing and you're feeling. So you're always manipulating something. And so, like, the best moment may have crappy light that you could never get a good exposure on and go unnoticed. And I find that's kind of the interesting thing, like, as you compare, like, for me, it's changing a little bit about photography, because, like, the lo-fi, crappy, shaky cell phone videos are what are moving people to action, or the things that are doing what we've kind of always relied on photojournalism to do. And then the photos now are becoming the art, like, they're the building in flames on, after the second night of protests, or the guy running with the upside down flag. Like, those are the images that are resonating, but they're not the ones that are sparking our initial like outrage, and aren't the ones that we're coming back to kind of get that like sense of like information, like what happened, or what are the pieces at play. So I find that really interesting, that the, and to the, that point, it makes it harder to not believe when it's a moving video, when you can see more of it. And whereas a picture, there's always that thing, like, oh, there's always a shade of a doubt. Well, how was it framed? Or was it Photoshop? Or what was just outside of the frame? So it's, I find it really interesting that we're all watching the news on really crappy cell phone video that's shaky, and everybody's nervous, and things are going crazy.
Yeah. True. So before we get into how these times will affect our photography businesses, any final thoughts, Devon, on the events happening?
I think that, well, what's important for me is that people continue the fight after they turn the cameras off and after this is not a trending topic, because it's going to happen, right? Yeah. Like, it always happens.
Right.
Everybody gets fired up. Everybody's, you know, excited. Everybody's for the cause. And then, you know, summertime's coming, like, and are people just going to like pass it off and forget about it until the next thing happens? And then we get fired up again. And then, you know, like, people don't follow people aren't going to follow the case, and people aren't going to make sure that people get prosecuted. You know, it's while it's popular that people are very invested in it, but I think we need to keep this popular. Like, this should be trending. This should be something that we follow through on, because that's the only way we're going to make any progress in the situation, is to continue to work on it. You know, you can't, it's like the New Year's resolution, right? The gym is always packed in January. By the time February comes, like, everybody's back to eating, you know, whatever cakes and bad diet they were on for the rest of the year. And then, you know, January rolls around again and everybody's back in the gym. So that's kind of what happens in these situations. It's like, you know, only the bad thing is that, you know, somebody gets killed and now everybody's fired up again. And then we go back to doing it. And, you know, because I think people want to be comfortable, and this is very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody's comfortable with this. So we go back to being comfortable, and it's easy to forget because we don't want to remember this stuff. You know, it's not the stuff we want to have on our minds. But if we don't fix it, it's coming back. You know, it's coming back. That gut is coming back. we're going to be in that same bad situation again, and these same emotions, and everything's going to flare up. And you see, now it's getting progressively worse. Mm-hmm. Like, the flare up is getting progressively worse. And, you know, hopefully this leadership won't be the leadership if something like this happens again. Because, again, I feel like the leadership could have made, like, it could have been avoided had we had, a lot of stuff could have been avoided had we had the proper leadership. You know, if we had leadership that would have jumped right on the TV and said, hey, this is what we're going to do. You know, this is what's going to happen. These people aren't going to, you know, these things are going to be taken care of. Sort of like when Trayvon Martin was killed and Obama went on TV, you know, he helped calm a lot. I mean, there were protests and there were marches and stuff, but he helped calm a lot of people down to where police precincts weren't getting overrun. You know, it didn't go that far. Like, police precincts weren't set on fire. Right. It didn't go that far, you know, but that comes from leadership. Yeah. That comes from having people that we can trust, that we can say, okay, if he says this is going to happen, this is going to happen.
I mean, we have Obama and Bush right now making statements that are far, far more gathering and combining of people rather than separating them, right? I mean, this president is a divider.
Yeah.
That's what we have
definitely
now.
Definitely.
Aaron, any final thoughts?
Oh, you know, like, I really agree a lot with what Devon said. I mean, I think... I think we have to have leadership. I think we have to stay committed to the deeper justice issues. You know, it's like, you know, it's like the thing, like the death of George Floyd, the murder of George Floyd set this off, but that is not even remotely close to the entire problem, you know? And I think people need to stay focused on that, and stay focused on educating we need to educate ourselves. Because we're in the era of, like, false equivalencies, where it's like, oh, a riot now because they rioted, now I don't have to listen to anything. It's like, no, that is a false equivalency, and I will not acknowledge that as an argument in this, because I think President Trump, that's his MO, and that's the MO of that kind of language, is that he is clearly, like, signaling racist behaviors. He is clearly stoking the flames, and so, like, I think we have to be clear in understanding what we're hearing, and we have to be clear in terms of what our message and response is. And I say this as somebody that, I mean, I have a lot of family members and friends who are Trump supporters. And so, like, it's, you know, it's hard to say, but I think that, that we have to stay focused on the deeper injustice. And I think education is key. Like, I'm surprised at how many people don't understand the history of our country past, like, an elementary level. Like, it really is kind of like, you know, 13 colonies and a sprinkling of Jesus and and Paul Revere, and we magically sprouted a Christian king. You know, it's like, I don't want to be overly flip and disrespectful about it, but it's hugely complicated. And there's a lot of blood spilled on this country that I think we can say, yeah, we're proud of it. But I think you have to acknowledge, yeah, we spilled a lot of blood.
Yeah.
And so those two beg two different questions. So
agreed. It's complicated.
Yeah. And ugly.
Yeah. So let's go into, you know, you both of you, I admire your work. Actually, speaking of admiring your work, when were these pictures taken, Devon, of the blood, the bullet-ridden, the painted flag?
Yeah, so that was actually painted by a former student of mine who came to help me with the photo workshop that I was hosting. And he asked me, he started to paint it and he was like, you know, is this too much? And I was like, if people have a problem with it, they can leave. Yeah. Right? Because it was, I think this was 2017, I want to say.
Wow.
Yeah. So I want to say it's 2017. And he came, and mind you, a lot of my workshop was made up of older white people from the suburbs would come to my workshop. And so this was the imagery.
Describe it for people.
Basically what he did, the front of the model is body paint. So the front of the model, she was painted with the Africa tree of life.
Mm.
So she had like the tree trunk on the bottom with the branches coming out across the top of her body and chest. And the back of her was painted with a bullet written American flag with blood protruding from the bullet holes. And I chose to, it's funny that the workshop was shooting with gels. So I actually lit the whole scene with red gels to kind of give it that feeling. Uh-huh. And one of the pictures is of her kind of consoling herself, like hugging herself. You see the back of her, and the other one is with her fist raised, kind of showing the powerful side of like this. Even this doesn't stop us. So, you know, it's funny because I've posted that picture many times since I've taken it, and it hasn't gotten a response that it's gotten in these last few days. Mm. You know, the overwhelming response to the point where people are asking me for the print,
really?
And asking me to put it on t-shirts. And, you know, so it's funny that, and I tell people this, like the images that you make today may not mean anything today, but, you know, 20 years from now, they may be invaluable. So, you know, that's why I think it's important to be true to yourself and be true to your craft. You know, make stuff from the heart, because when you make stuff that's real, people eventually will get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully to get it before you die. and you can experience some of the, you know, the joys of people appreciating your work. But I mean, we tend to do that to artists.
Mm-hmm.
Like we wait for them to die and then we recognize their genius.
Yeah.
It's just like all these guys are like geniuses now that they died.
Well, we chastise them first while they're alive, and then we
exactly. Yeah, everybody, nobody likes this person, but you know, we all see their genius when they, you know, they passed away, and we take the time to actually, you know, look at what they have. So I'm glad to be acknowledged. I'm bothered that it took people that long to get it though, you know, and that it wasn't important, you know, that it wasn't important enough to say like, hey, this stuff is going on, this is what we're dealing with. You know, spark a conversation. But I think people looked at it and thought we were trying to be extra and be like, you know, rebel rousers and that sort of thing, instead of saying like, man, this isn't right. We should talk about it. You know, and that's all I want to do. I don't have the answers, but I would like to spark the conversation, because I think the conversations are overdue.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So how do you think these current events will affect your photography business?
For me, I'm a little worried. I do think I deal with my race, and I tried not to acknowledge it for a long time, but I realized that my race kind of scares people, you know, because I do a lot of stuff in studio, and it's sad, but I find like a lot of people see black men as super predators. Like they're not comfortable, you know, and I can see the fear in people's faces. Like I'm 6 foot, you know, I can see the fear in people's faces before I speak, you know.
Yeah.
And I guess because I do a good job of speaking what I call the Queen's English, that it makes them feel comfortable, you know. And I do a lot of work trying to make, you know, non-black and brown people comfortable around me. So I don't know how this will affect negatively or positively. You know, it's difficult because, you know, I drum up business by speaking to people, but now I have to do it, you know, with the mask on from a distance. So you know, with all the you know, with all the racial unrest, and you know, and it's sad because it's not, you know, I don't experience it just from white people, you know. Mm-hmm. I experience it from a lot of non-black people, you know. So it's and I think this heightens it, because people, instead of people getting, trying to understand the situation, they become afraid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and scared people react, you know, they don't think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they tend to shy away, and now they don't want to do business, and now they don't want to patronize you because they're scared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they let their fear lead them in other directions that may not necessarily be real.
Right.
You know, so I'm not, it's another situation where I'm unsure, just like the COVID thing.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm unsure, you know, like all these things are going to affect everybody. We just haven't seen the effects of it. Only thing I can do is continue to be who I am. You know, I'm not a super predator. You know, that's a fact, you know, and I have to walk with that, you know,
yes,
and be comfortable in that. And it's difficult because, you know, we as black men, we kind of spend a lot of time making sure people are comfortable around us.
Yeah.
Making sure that we're seen in the right light, you know.
It's exhausting. We don't
speak, it's exhausting, yeah, right? You don't want to talk too loud. You don't want to get too justifiably angry.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you have to control your anger, and you can't express yourself the way, you know, you want to. Or what's, you know, even justifiably, like, you know, you end up having other people, other non-black people in social situations yelling for you.
Yeah.
You know, because they can, right?
Yeah.
It's just like all the things that we have to do. And like Clay said, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
You know, and the sad part is that we're subconsciously doing it at this point. Like, we're so trained, like, we're not even thinking about it. We're just doing it.
Yeah.
You know, but it is exhausting, and it does wear on you. But I think we need to find a way to work through it. And I've come to the conclusion that I need to work with the people that love me, right? Mm-hmm. And whether they, you know, whether they're black, non-black, there's certain people that just rock with you,
mm-hmm,
you know? So those are the people that I will continue to work with, and those are the people that I will continue to build my business on, you know. So I want to work with the people that, you know, like, I mentor people's kids. Like, those are the people I'll show exorbitant amount of love to, mm-hmm, because they already trust me, right? So I think I need to just do the most for the people who are already my customer, you know, and build off of that, rather than trying to get customers who may never accept me,
mm-hmm,
you know, and waste time doing that. I rather provide the best business and services for those customers that love me.
Yeah. Just keep them coming back.
Yeah. And I'll love them back. And I think that's what I need to build on, because, you know, it's just like with the COVID, I think we all kind of trust the people we know a little bit more,
mm-hmm.
You know, we all have a little bit more comfort with that person that we think, you know, maybe, you know, you kind of have a history with them, so you think they are taking the right precautions and they are doing the right thing, mm-hmm, rather than just, you know, people we don't know,
right,
you know, the average person, you know.
I agree.
Like, I speak to my neighbors a little bit more casually than I do to the person at CVS. Like, I'm very guarded.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah.
That's where I'm at with it.
What about you, Aaron?
Yeah, you know, probably a different, there's a lot of differences for me in terms of this. Like, A, I'm not in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, you know, lots of different kind of complications there. I'm just unsure. Like, I don't really know what's going to happen. I feel, I definitely feel like a change. Like, there's, like, between COVID and between the racial unrest, like, I feel fundamentally there's a change, the way people talk, the way people interact. And I can feel it visually. Like, I have a really hard time processing imagery now.
Mm.
Like I was looking at a photo book the other day, and I was like, man, I don't know if it's just like, I'm just bombarded with so much stimulus, and I've been sitting, home and doing a little bit more of that. But I definitely feel like our visual cues have shifted. And, you know, to Devon's point about, you know, that amazing image that he shot, I think that's like our lot as photographers, is that we have to stay true to our voice. Mm-hmm. And if, when you create, like if you create something honest and you create something like emotional for you, that eventually that will find its place. And so, you know, I mean, definitely like in terms of COVID, and we talked about this on the other podcast too, is mm-hmm. As a portrait photographer, and even like with headshots and portraits, like your first interaction with your clients and your models is so important. Mm-hmm. And it's super weird now because there's, you know, like you've got a mask, you don't know what people's comfort levels are, mm-hmm. With, you know, in terms of like being sanitary, like do I overclean and make them feel like I am OCD? Do I clean it? You know, like what do I do? You know, like, is it going to be weird if I don't, you know, mm-hmm. if I don't interact in a different way? So, and it puts pressure back on us as the photographer to now think about a third or fourth level of like, you know, personality, expression, light, sensitivity to, you know, mm-hmm. the masks that we're wearing. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. I know personally, I'm excited to see the voices and the way that people have changed, how they view things. Like, I think a lot of people are waking up to it, which is funny because, you know, when Devon said earlier, he's like, you know, about feeling tired. Like I have, you know, several of my Black friends that, like, when Trump was elected, like I was working at a high school in a underserved community. Mm-hmm. And it was primarily Hispanic. And the day after he got elected and that week, like we had like psychologists on, like people were really, really fraught.
Wow.
And fearful about what was really happening.
Yeah.
But I had a couple of my friends who were Black, and I was like, man, I was like, you seem like a little like chiller with this. He's like, oh man. He's like, he's like, I've been through this 100 times. He's like, yeah. He's like, I get it. He's like, I'm not, he's like, I knew what he was in the beginning.
Yeah.
And it was funny because I think for a lot of us, we're all in different stages of this. And so, and I've noticed like a couple of my Black friends are like, man, I'm just tired. Or like, yeah. It's time for somebody else to help with this, 'cause I'm tired. And I've heard that, like, 1,000 times, which mm-hmm. is why when Devon said it, it like sparked me. So, I feel like there's just a lot shifting right now. And I feel like my hope is that we're all more accepting of our natural responses and our natural personalities and the art that that's going to create.
Mm-hmm.
And that people will stop trying to categorize it, and people will kind of accept the fact that we're all influenced by different cultures. We're all, you know, we're all influenced by, you know, our prejudices as well as like our loves and our art. So,
mm-hmm.
I don't know. We'll see. I think we're right now, we're so close to such a big thing that I think it's going to be a really long time until we have any perspective.
Yeah. You know, the fact that we've lost lives, you know, George Floyd losing his life, sometimes sacrifices happen that cause a giant shift. The tragedy of having Trump become our president. But like Rick Ross said, you know, sometimes you have to destroy before you can elevate. And maybe, I'm not sure if I'm the kind of person who believes in things happening for a reason, but maybe things happen for a reason. Yeah. Maybe we come out stronger on the other side.
If not, we'll come out more honest, right? Like,
it
may turn into a complete, like, literal dumpster fire. But I think now people are more honest, and I think more people are becoming educated on how to work through their racism. Because like we're all racist in some way. Like, we're all influenced by racism, and so like learning how to accept that and work through that, I think gives everyone more comfort, right? Like, mm-hmm. we can understand our feelings and counteract our feelings. So yeah, I don't know. We'll see if this sticks. Like the death of Trayvon Martin is, I think, what radicalized me. Like, I still to this day, like, I find it a hugely traumatic event for me.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I can't understand why people are still not irate about that.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I'm hoping that maybe more people will kind of, you know, unfortunately, as things happen, maybe more people pick up that like enough is enough feeling.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that was a lot. <to process. laughs> This whole time has been a lot, hasn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I wake up every day thinking that I'm dreaming. I mean, the whole the beginning of the year started like that, you know.
Yes.
It's
well, it's funny too, because I'm on, you know, we're what, six hours ahead.
Yeah.
And so my news, like, I wake up to like the things erupting into flames, and you know, and so it's like my AM news is so bizarre coming from the United States.
I could imagine.
My wife and I were talking. It's like I'm usually pretty good at managing my media and all that, but like I am so overwhelmed emotionally, and like I feel very discombobulated.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of like I can't get my I can't settle my rage, and I can't find like that space where I can like really think. And I was like laughing. I was like, maybe a podcast will give me a reason to focus on being coherent and not just being like in, you know, like pure outrage and disbelief.
Let me ask you a question. When I am in the Netherlands, you know, with my family, the news there seems more open and unfiltered compared to when I'm here watching the news. Is that the same experience for you in Madrid?
Yeah. I to be honest, I don't watch a lot of news.
Mm-hmm.
I don't watch a lot of TV in general. But like, you know, like for me here, like I think people in Spain are, I mean, you know, as a, you know, when I was born, it was, just before I was born, it was a dictatorship with Franco. And so people here have a really interesting relationship with politics and with things going on. There's, from my perspective, what I see, there's not that fundamental denial of like, we are unable to agree that grass is green and we're just going to agree to disagree that grass is green. Like there's not that level of ridiculousness. And I think in general, like there's a, you know, like in America, like there's, you know, like our political parties are really not that far apart when compared to a lot of places in Europe. And so,
true.
You know, you'll get like, I mean, there's a true leftist party in Spain,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like legitimately want, you know, very, very left wing type things.
Yeah.
And there's a the alternative right wing. And so the conversations are much more diverse, and to come to a center areas, I think both sides get a lot more. So to me, that's what's different is it's not... there's just not like a fundamental disagreement on things that there should be no disagreement on. And I think that's what's so exhausting about American news.
Yeah.
And for me, I watch it reverberate, like three stories get posted throughout the entire day on every network, basically. And you're like, there's gotta be something else to this story.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Like the rioting, it's like riots, riots. So like I'm looking at Twitter and I'm seeing 1,000 other things going on.
Yeah.
So.
It's so true. Okay. Well,
it's nice to have a step away, though. I will.
Yes.
It's nice to have to not be like right in it.
Yes. Yes. The thing is that being on the outside, you're more on the outside than we are. I mean that could have its own frustrations because you're basically you know, an ocean removed. Yeah. So
yeah.
If you wanted to do anything, it all has to be online for you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's either monetary or online.
Yeah.
Like I've been trying to. Like be a resource for any of my friends that, you know, are in this, you know, either part-time or full-time and just, you know, but yeah, it is, and part of it is like, we removed ourselves specifically from part of this, like part of our thing was like, I don't want to have my personal relationships. I don't want my son to grow up with, some of the conversations that we were having. And so we decided to make some changes. I mean, not specifically like running away from Trump, but just in general embracing, a lifestyle in a community that was more community based and less, you know, kind of like tribal, you know.
True, true.
Aaron, if my wife has anything to say about it, I may be your neighbor.
Dude, you know what's really funny? Like we'll have to talk about it because I have my friend Monique. She brought a retreat of Black women here to women of color to discuss. Like their experiences and just like a fun retreat. And she's like, I'm moving there. And like literally was like talking about moving here. And she was supposed to be here actually 2 weeks ago until COVID and this stuff. Because like, I find that, if you like love the hustle and bustle of America, you'll find Spain very difficult to get used to.
Mm.
But if the addiction to like, you know, performance and all that kind of stuff isn't, what you see your life as being, it's a great place. And people here are, Spain, it has its problems. Like there's racism here. There's, you know, they had an influx of immigrants. And so there's some of that, but like, as an American, it's almost just the disparity of levels, you know, is really, like, I don't want to put it down or to make it act like it's not important, but as an American, you're kind of like, oh, wow, this is better. You know? People's attitudes about that.
Yeah.
So come visit. You guys should come visit.
Yeah.
No, she's, well, my wife, I don't know if you know, my wife is Salvadorian. Mm-hmm. And, so she loves Spain. I'm the only one. My daughter has been, she actually took a class trip in high school. She loves Spain. Mm. And she's now in college. But my wife loves Spain. And she's like, if Trump gets reelected, grab your passport.
Well, I will say that my entire family renewed its passports on November 5th of 2016. So, and we were in Spain a year later. So not that was the reason, but it's a great country. And I find it really interesting because it's there's, especially in the European Union, there can be some negative attitudes about Spain. But I find that Spanish people are the most adept at modern life of any, I've lived in France for 2 summers doing homestays in France. I lived in Japan for a couple of years. I've traveled quite a bit, and Spanish people, they love life. There's not, it's, the economy is not amazing, but people live really rich lives. And you walk by the parks and the park is filled with older people, retired, sitting there drinking a beer, playing chess, checkers, whatever. And I'm like, that doesn't happen in parks in any other country I've really been to. People here know how to live, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I will say it's technologically, sometimes it could be they have blazing fast internet, but nobody here is they're not really dependent on e-commerce as much. Uh-huh. So even Amazon is Amazon circa 2010. So it can be it's not next day here. Yeah,
Well, the one thing that might keep Devon from being there is B&H and Adorama are not cheap to get there.
Dude, and electronics are expensive.
And they pay a lot of money for film, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have to come to America and stock up with a ship a fridge.
Exactly.
Seriously.
Right. Every time I come to visit, I guess I'll bring you some film.
That's what we do. I always laugh because shipping anything to Spain is a nightmare. But literally you could get almost anything off of a plane. The customs here are super chill, but if you ship anything, it's a nightmare. And anytime we go to the United States, it's it's time to update electronics. And if people are coming, I'm bring, this film and this thing from Adorama that they don't sell here. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty. Any final thoughts, guys, before we boogie?
Yeah. Just one final thought. I think, we're in a time of great change. And I feel like the one thing that is wrong is doing nothing.
Yeah.
If you feel like you can do absolutely nothing in this situation, I think that's the only wrong thing to do. There's a lot you can do. If you're not the protester, then just have a conversation in your household, about what's going on. Mm-hmm. You don't have to change the minds, go out and speak on the courthouse steps. You can speak to your family and your neighbors about what's going on and how you feel about it. And I think that's what needs to be happening is just having honest discussions like we had here today, right? Mm-hmm. We're all photographers, but we're from all walks of life, different parts of the world, different parts of the country,
yes.
different background. But we had a conversation today, right? Mm-hmm. And, I learned something about each of you through your conversation, and I hopefully, and I got a better understanding, most importantly, of you guys from our conversation. And I think that's what we need to do is we need to have conversations, not with just like-minded people. We need to have a conversation with everybody, right? Mm-hmm. So it's important if we're going to talk about this subject. I think it's a genius of you, Clay, to invite Aaron onto this because he is a white man living in Spain, but, knows about America and can give us his perspective on what it's like. I think that's very important not to just have a one-sided discussion, So that's my final thought.
Agreed. Yeah, Aaron has always been very whenever things are happening, I could look towards Aaron's feed or stories and see that he's plugged in, right? That he's not disconnected. He understands what is happening and doesn't turn a blind eye or ignore, he embraces it. And so it's always cool, like, chatting with him or, you know, the both of you. I always DM you both for advice on photography, studio stuff and all that sort of stuff. So, but yeah, he's plugged in. So.
Yeah. I got lucky. I have an amazing wife that, found, like, I'm originally from Oklahoma, raised in Texas, and my wife is Mexican, but born in the United States. Mm-hmm. And so I was lucky enough that she was patient enough with me to understand what I needed to understand. And she's been, like an amazing advocate and has opened my eyes. And I've always been one, like, I love learning. I even love having difficult conversations. Like, I find that I'm a pretty passionate person, but I also really seek understanding. Like, I think that's what makes me a good photographer, actually, is I am driven to understand. So I got, I'm lucky and I enjoyed it. And I'm really grateful that you guys invited me on the podcast. It's been, I always enjoy, I usually listen to my long bus rides to pick up my son to you guys chatting. I'm like, oh man, I'm going to have to DM Devon about that when I get back or like, but, and then I always forget cause it's like 10,000 things happen. I'm like, damn it, I want to say something. So yeah, it's an honor. Like, I really enjoy the conversations you guys have, and there's always, like, opinionated and frank conversation about it. So I'm grateful for the opportunity.
Much appreciated. Any other final thoughts, Aaron, before we boogie?
Yeah, I think my main thing is like, for people to educate themselves and not, you know, not like go to school, but like pick up something that is going to specifically talk about like racism and anti-racism, and invest, I think, in the conversation, and give yourself permission to realize that you don't know everything and that we're going to mess up. Cause I think that's the hardest part. I think especially, like, I don't want to call attention to the plight of white people or anything, but I think as white people, it comes with its own set of difficulties. And so, like, I really just encourage people to educate themselves a little bit, to step into it, because, like, not once have I ever had anybody, you know, make me feel horrible or not be understanding when I showed a true sense of understanding. Mm-hmm. And when I did a little bit of research and didn't just ask people, like, you know, what about reverse racism? Like, just do the research, Google that first, and then say, hey, here's what I understand, or what am I missing? Versus, I think, just like going in and hitting people with something that is like just the most basic level of understanding. So I think education for me is key, and to Dewan's point, conversations and educating yourself for the conversation, not just walking in and saying whatever comes to your mind, but like thinking about it and being open and honest with people so that you're not disrespectful without understanding. Mm-hmm. Kind of what you're saying. So that's my two cents.
Yes, cool. Thanks. I would have to say that during these times, and I've seen sort of people trying to shame people who are not playing the game, I guess, or whatever this is. If someone is not sharing, you know, a black square, don't shame them. You know, I mean, if someone is on the edge of being an ally and you shame them, you just push them off to the other side. So, you know, people, everyone deals with this stuff in their own way. This might be extremely stressful for people, and maybe they don't want to share in on this because it's too much. I don't know, but everyone has their own struggles. So, you know, no shaming of potential allies.
Yeah.
I released an episode of Just Clay. I know that show is that episode, that podcast is super random, and I've gotten a lot of good feedback. So, you know, if people would like to hear my take on our 401 years of struggles and why it is we are at the point of protesting and potential rioting and, you know, stoking of the flames, go listen to that episode. Yeah. I think we should all support each other. We all are struggling in some way, somehow, but don't shame people. Devon, where can tell everyone where they can find you?
I guess the easiest place to find me is at my website, and you can find all my social media links from there. That's DevonWarrenPhoto.com. That's DevonWarrenPhoto.com.
Cool. Aaron?
Yeah, I think probably the best place to find me is from my website as well. It's AaronGeneFotography.com or also AaronGene.com. And I think I'm having an internal debate with myself on social media, so I'm not sure what social media channels will remain in my in my direct future. So
you're going to cut something out? Start.
Yeah, I have a, it's probably a different podcast, but I have a huge moral objection to Facebook.
Okay.
And this is the tip of the iceberg. And so I'm kind of done with that. Like, I don't know. I'm going to think about it. I don't want to be like, I'm going to quit Facebook. And then 6 months later be like, well, I took a break. I'm back. My website will always be there. And that's, I think that's what I'm going to kind of focus on going forward, is like using that to show my work the way I want to show it.
Agree. And you can find me at my website, cwdaily.com. Thank you so much, guys, for this discussion. And
thank you.
Find them all online, guys, you know, listeners. And you'll hear us in the next episode. Ciao.
Ciao.
Thank you, Aaron.
That was good.
That was great.
Yeah.